Are you ready to take your intermittent fasting lifestyle to the next level? There's nothing better than community to help with that. In the Delay, Don't Deny community, we all embrace the clean fast, and there's just the right support for you as you live your intermittent fasting lifestyle. You can connect directly with me in the Ask Jen group, and I'll answer all of your questions personally. If you're new to intermittent fasting or recommitting to the intermittent fasting lifestyle, join the 28-Day Fast Start group. After your fast start, join us for support in the first year group. Need tips for long-term maintenance? We have a place for that. There are many more useful spaces beyond these, and you can interact in as many as you like. Visit jenstevens.com/community to join us. An annual membership costs just over $1 a week when you do the math. If you aren't ready to fully commit for a year, join for a month, and you can cancel at any time. If you know you'll want to stay forever, we also have a lifetime membership option available. IF is free. You don't need to join our community to fast. But if you're looking for support from a community of like-minded intermittent fasters, we're here for you at jenstevens.com/community. That's jenstevens.com/community. Achieving my long-term goals is more about creating healthy habits and less about quick fixes. And that's why I love both intermittent fasting and daily harvest. Tim Spector, a gut health expert and founder of Zoe, and Dr. B, gastroenterologist and author of Fiberfueled, recommend that you aim for at least 30 unique plant foods per week. Daily Harvest helps make it easy. One of my favorite options is the sweet potato and wild rice hash harvest bowl. With Daily Harvest, I'm getting tons of plant-based options built on organic fruits and vegetables that are easy to prep and free of weird ingredients such as fillers, seed oils, and added sugars. Create healthy habits that last with Daily Harvest. For a limited time only, go to dailyharvest.com/ifstories to get $30 off your first box plus free shipping. That's dailyharvest.com/ifstories for $30 off your first box and free shipping. dailyharvest.com/ifstories. Welcome to Intermittent Fasting Stories. I'm your host, Jen Stevens, author of the New York Times bestseller, Fast, Feast, Repeat, as well as the book that started it all, Delay, Don't Deny. I lost over 80 pounds thanks to intermittent fasting after learning how to delay my eating rather than denying myself the delicious foods I want to eat. Now, who's ready to hear an inspirational intermittent fasting story? That's why we're here. So let's get excited to talk to today's guest. Hi, everybody, and welcome. This is episode 124 of Intermittent Fasting Stories. Today, I'm here with Autumn Cumlin. Autumn is from Milton, Wisconsin, where she is a registered dietitian and nutritionist for Stoughton Health. Welcome, Autumn.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jen. I'm so happy to be able to talk to you today.
Well, I am so glad to have you here. I love to talk to someone that's in the health community, especially a dietitian slash nutritionist, because with the large Facebook groups that I have, very frequently we'll have a member who says something like, I just met with my nutritionist, and she said, oh, don't do fasting. Don't do that. And so I love to have somebody like you that is a fan of fasting.
That's great. I'm excited to talk to everybody about it today. And I, too, got my big buy-in when I started hearing some of your guests that were in the medical field.
Well, you know, I like to start by asking, what brought you to intermittent fasting and when was that?
Okay, I'll give you a little bit of backstory. Growing up, I'm the youngest of six, so I was always fairly average child, especially up until about third grade. Then about third grade, that's about the first time that I noticed I must have had a growth spurt. I started becoming taller than all my friends, bigger than my friends. It was also the first time that I actually remember my mom having to buy me pants with the elastic waistband from the JCPenney catalog. It never seemed to be anything, an issue with my family. You know, my parents never said anything to me about my weight or, you know, ever made me feel like there was something wrong. But that's kind of when looking back, I do remember that. And I also remember asking my mom a book I saw at a bookstore. It was called Thin Kids, the proven healthy, sensible weight loss program for children. And that was by Mindy Cohen and Louis Abrahamson with Ruth Winter. And I actually still have the book because as a nutritionist, I saved things.
When did that come out? When did that book come out?
85, I believe, was the year that that came out. So based upon that and, you know, how old I am, I was figuring it was about that timing that I kind of got my hands on this book. What I liked about it is there were pictures of children, average looking children, doing some physical activity and exercises, jumping jacks and sit-ups and typical things like that. And I remember doing some of these exercises on my own. So that was kind of probably, I would think, the beginning of it. And again, nothing that I felt like anybody had said to me or that I needed to do. But for myself, I thought, probably seeing that, well, I am bigger, I'm taller than all the rest of my friends, you know, I better do something about this. Yeah, I guess weight always seemed to be on my mind, even to thinking back of Easter holidays. I remember putting my Easter candy in a little box and kind of portioning it out and only allowing myself to have so many pieces to prevent myself from overindulging. Luckily, none of that behavior became an eating disorder or anything along those lines. It just seemed to be something I was aware of. My mom had done TOPS, taking off pounds sensibly, you know.
Yeah, I knew what that stood yeah. for. Is that a Christian weight loss program?
No, I think
not?
It's just...
Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, and they probably have a variation of it, but she still is a member to this day. But she's done that. And I remember years ago, you know, Slim Fast, seeing that in the house or seeing the micro diet where they would send you this little freeze dry packet and then you added water to it, reconstituted it and cooked it.
I never saw that one. The micro diet?
Yeah, the micro diet.
Oh, that sounds really yucky.
Yeah. And I would have to say, I think when she was done with it, I probably sampled some of it and have to agree. I think it was pretty yucky. Yeah. So some of those things. So she was always conscious about it as well. And that's probably where my interest in it came. Then around middle school time, probably about eighth grade, I remember doing the cabbage soup diet with my mom. That was kind of a big thing then. Nothing that she asked me to do. I just wanted to do it with her. I remember, you know, a tuna and beets and a scoop of vanilla ice cream in the evening. And to this day, I cannot eat beets. It just,
oh gosh,
it's something that just, it brings back that diet in particular, but I just cannot eat any beets.
Yeah, I would not eat cabbage soup. I went through that phase too. I did made the giant pot of it.
Yes.
And I swear, I think I would make it like two meals and then I would throw it away.
Exactly. Oh, but you can eat all you want.
All you want. Yeah. Well, that's how much I wanted.
Yes. Very true. It didn't last very long, to say the least. So, and then at one point, I do remember even having still the slip on it, but a physical that I had, seeing my pediatrician, I think it was maybe around eighth grade. And I noted on that sheet, the doctor had written my weight 205. And
that's in eighth grade.
Yeah. And even though I almost 5'7", still, you know, I'm thinking like, wow, that's a lot. My dad used to call me Amazon girl because it was big, you know, tall, and I seemed to carry my weight fairly well. So it didn't seem like anybody was concerned about it. The doctor never said to my mom, you need to do something about this. It never became anything that anyone kind of pushed me in a certain direction about my weight. So then, fast forwarding a little bit, by the time I graduated high school, I was about 175. And so I think it just, you know, normal growing up, changing, puberty, all that stuff. You know, I was really big into show choir and marching band and all that stuff. So it was pretty active in that sense. But definitely, you know, 175 and 5'7 still is bigger. So between my freshman and sophomore year of college, my mom had joined Weight Watchers and she used the point system and she lost quite a significant amount of weight. We always joke she lost her mind because then she bought a convertible too right after that.
Oh gosh, she felt so good. She was free
she
in the
did.
Air.
Exactly. So I came home and I was also amazed how she looked and I kind of mimicked what she had done and looked at all our materials. And by the time I went back to school my sophomore year, I was down to 137 pounds.
Wow. Now that is pretty low.
It is. And especially for me, and it was something that was not in order to stay that, keep that, I joined Jazzercise. I would exercise almost 2-3 hours a day. I tracked every little thing I put in my mouth. I mean, very high fiber because that's what that plan was based on. Everything was great. Kind of saw a size 6 for, you know, a very brief moment.
What year was that?
That was probably 98. About 98.
Okay. I was just asking because, you know, the size 6, when I was in college, I was a size 8, but that was probably the equivalent of today's size 2 because they changed
absolutely.
Them. So 1998, that puts that in perspective. That's so funny that you said that because same thing happened to me right after my freshman year of college. Mm-hmm. I went home, had put on some weight as a freshman, and between freshman and sophomore year, I was counting calories, doing a lot of dieting, yeah. Got real thin, but it was the whole counting calories time for me. But yeah, Weight Watchers did it for you. So yeah, 137 pounds is tiny for 5'7".
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I never remembered being that weight. It was almost like, oh, 205 to 175 to, wow, 137. And so, like I said, it didn't come easy to maintain. And once I went back to school, I started focusing on my studies again and noticed staying up late. Wasn't a soda drinker, so I would like snack on cornflakes because it was plain and boring. And I really didn't like them anyway. But, you know, as a result of doing that simple carbohydrate continuously, my weight started going back up. And then it was up to like 159 by then. At that time, I decided that I would join Weight Watchers on my own. I would go do it. I would go weigh in. I'd do all the steps that I needed to do. And I did get my weight back down to 147, sometimes as low as 144. But looking back at some of the records, it really didn't seem to stay there very long. It kind of even rose up between 2000 and 2005, anywhere from 152 to 159. So that kind of seemed to be where my body had settled and where I stayed. So fast forward, got married around 2002. In 2006, we were expecting our first child. Things didn't really go as planned. You know, you go in for those first appointments and then no heartbeat, they do ultrasounds. And then we'd found out that it was ending in miscarriage quite early, but it was twins. So we were kind of like, oh my gosh, we really wanted twins. And, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. So, but we were fortunate to get pregnant fairly soon after that and had a daughter that was due in June of 2007. And so everything went fairly well with that and pretty textbook, I would say. And then I ended up gaining the 35, you know, the high end of the recommended at that point for that pregnancy. But it took me 2007 when she was born until 2010 to even get back down to the 152, 159 range. So it took me forever. I nursed both my children, but never was the people that say, oh, I nursed and the weight just melted right off, you know, never.
No. How close together were your two kids?
So my very first one in 2007, and fast forward almost 6 years, we have a 2013. So it took us a long
time. I was thinking that happened in that 2007 to 2010 frame, but no, 2013 was the second.
Yeah.
My body did not bounce back very well after the second. It bounced back much better after the first.
I would agree with you. I've got some of that too. So yeah, in between those, the two, because it took so long, then I ended up having what they call a molar pregnancy. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I've heard of it, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, it's where your two sperm fertilize one egg at the exact same time. So if you think about some other multiple chromosomes kind of thing. So it had double of everything. So it's something that was never going to go on. But the downside of it is that it mimics all of normal pregnancy symptoms. So you get HCG levels rise, you get morning sickness. I mean, it's the whole shebang. And throughout all of that, because it's the way they consider it, it's like a rapidly growing tissue. By the time I found out about that, it was not going to obviously become a child. They had to do, after we had to have it, you know, DNC kind of thing, but they ended up having to do blood tests. And that took like 8 months for my HCG levels to drop normal.
Because it really confused your body.
It did. It really confused your body. And because they consider that a rapidly growing tissue, they classify that as could metastasize into a cancer. So they want to make sure that you do not get pregnant during a time of which that's happening in your body. So, you know, I had to go on birth control and I had to do all these blood tests. You know, I started joking with the lab tech. I said, we're becoming old friends. See you next Friday. Cause we'd get, it was like every week going in for blood draws. And so between, you know, the first child and that, you know, there was a lot of that going on and still my weight wasn't getting back to pre-pregnancy weight with my daughter. And so shortly then after that, when we got the clear, we were expecting our son, which was born in February of 2013. And same thing, once that happened, you know, it was textbook. I gained the 35 pounds again. His, again, like you said, the second child, it took a lot longer for that weight to come out off. I was 178 after delivering with him. And then even after nursing him for 15 months, I only got down to 171. I mean, it's like very minimal.
Yeah.
So yeah, 4 years later, finally, my weight got down to 157. I'm a dietitian, so it's, I felt like I knew everything I need to do. I'd exercise, I'd eat right, and my weight just wouldn't budge. There was no amount of movement that I could do. And it was almost like, okay, well, I guess this is kind of where I'm going to be because I can't get it to do anything of all the ways I know for it to healthfully come off.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories. Promo code IFSTORIES10 to get your magnesium breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/IFSTORIES, promo code IFSTORIES10. If you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know what a fan I am of Dr. Tim Spector and the work he's doing with Zoe. I was first introduced to his work in 2015, and I've been following his research ever since. What I love most about the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is that they have weekly interviews with world-leading experts who explain how their latest research can benefit your health. Recently, I was thrilled to finally meet him face-to-face as we recorded an episode for the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, and this episode aired on April 11th. We had a chance to talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study, and I had the opportunity to explain the clean fast to Jonathan, which may explain why he didn't enjoy his prior experiences with fasting. Search for Zoe Science and Nutrition on your podcast player or on YouTube to hear the latest episode, and don't forget to look for the April 11th episode to hear me, Tim, and Jonathan talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study. What we were taught, you were successful on Weight Watchers. I was successful with counting calories. We were just taught, eat less, move more. It will happen. If it's not happening, you're counting wrong. You're not doing something right. You're lying. You know, that all those thoughts. That this math has got to work out, right? That's what we're taught.
Exactly. Yeah, especially as dietitians, that's exactly what you're taught. We preach that to all of our patients. And then when they're not having the success that you expect them to have, you're wondering if they're indulging in a glass of wine before bed that they're forgetting to tell you about, or that there's certain things, or you think, are they truly doing this? Do they truly want this? So yeah, it goes against everything that we've been taught. We just don't, we're kind of at a loss of how else to help them. So then moving fast forward from April of 2017 to October of 2017 to 2018, this is a point in time that I started noticing my weight just started increasing. It just kept getting higher and higher to a point it was 175. And ironically, that happened to be the year that I turned 40. It was right before I was turning 40. And looking at the weight charts on my own graphing of being a religious weigher, seeing it just increase and increase. I couldn't believe it. It's like, what more can I do? I'm not doing anything different yet. My weight just keeps escalating. And so again, I tried everything that I knew was the right way to do. I've never been a person that really jumps on fad diets other than maybe that cabbage soup diet, but
that was
never,
your mom. You know. She's the one who got you in that one.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So then to actually the point at which where I got to intermittent fasting, where that entered my life, that was about late November of 2018. My husband likes to listen to Joe Rogan interviews. He was doing an interview with Rhonda Patrick, Dr. Rhonda Patrick, and she was referencing some work that was done by Sachin Panda in regards to time-restricted eating and intermittent fasting. And so, you know, at first he was like, you need to watch this. And I'm, you know, as a dietitian, as I mentioned, I've always, this is crazy. Why do people do that? That's close to starving. But as I sat there and I listened to what they had to say, you know, how they talk about people because they always whether have a, you know, sugary beverage or always have something and they're eating every, you know, 4 to 6 small times a day or whatever it may be, I kind of looked at the timing of the first meal in the morning until I went to bed, you know, maybe packing lunches at night and having a cracker or two, and the time span in which I was eating spanned over 15 hours. And I was like, wow, that is huge. And so that is the point that it was like, okay, maybe there is some truth to this. I'll be the experiment of one. I'll track my weight every day. I will just start at an intermittent fasting window about, I kind of aimed for 9 to 10 hours of eating window, because they were looking at some studies where people that had been eating only in a 9-hour window and the amount of energy that they had the next day when they were running or doing certain physical activities. And so I kind of thought maybe that was a nice sweet spot to be at. So that was kind of my goal. So being a busy parent as most, you know, I my eating window would fluctuate between 7 and 11.5 hours each day. And so that's where I started. And by end of November 2018 till January 2020, finally, like 10 pounds. I lost 10 pounds. I got down to 164. I looked at I would use the Lose It app and I track all my weight. And it was just almost each day I'd step on the scale, be down, almost unbelievable. I'm like, how long is this going to last? You know, let's ride this out and see how long this lasts. So then I finally, having lost some weight, you know, I started tweaking that window, that eating window a little bit and fluctuating between, you know, 6 and 9 hours. And then I lost another 7 pounds and then it was down to about 157. And that kind of stayed the same until about October of 2019. At that point, I already had it downloaded. We had downloaded it for a trip, but I never had an opportunity to listen to the podcast. And so my husband had put them on my phone and I thought, well, I have a 35-minute commute each way to work. Let's start listening to these. And so that's when I started listening to your intermittent fasting stories. And that's when I first heard of you. I have to say it, I really love your Southern drawl. You're welcome. My brother lives in Oklahoma and he has since he was 18 and he's now going to be 52, and you know, he definitely
he's
sounds
got a southern
like he's
accent.
Yes.
Here's a funny story. I got an email from somebody. I mean, they must have taken a lot of time. Someone who listened to Fast Feast Repeat on Audible. They went to my website, found how to contact me, sent me a message just to tell me how much they hate my southern accent. And I'm like, thank you for the feedback. It's just how I talk. Right. I mean, I don't know this person. They're obviously not a podcast listener, but they took all the time. So thank you for saying you like it, because that just happened a few weeks ago. But I was like, gosh, that took a lot of energy. She really wanted me to know. But what's also ironic is, you know, I almost didn't get a chance to record it because of the pandemic was going on when it was time to record it. So I was supposed to go to Atlanta and I couldn't travel. And so we weren't sure if I could record it from home with the McMillan people on the phone with me, which we actually ended up doing. But they're like, well, we have a backup person if you can't do it. We found someone with a southern accent to read it if you can't. So whoever didn't like it, it was going to be southern either way.
That's right. And you know, you can't base it off of one feedback, you know, you can't change everything based off of that. And obviously,
but thank you. I just wanted to say, I appreciate that you enjoy it. That made me smile. But so you started listening to the podcast in October of 2019.
Correct. Yep. And that's when I started and I heard about you and then everybody's talking about your book, Delay, Don't Deny. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to get this book. And then heard about Jason Fung and his obesity code, diabetes code. So my husband has a Blink. And so he downloaded those two for me. So they kind of give you the quick synopsis of the obesity code and the diabetes code, which was good, but definitely I bought the books and I read them, which was way better. So got a lot more out of it with that. And also read The book you recommended, Bert Herring's Appetite Correction, that one's fantastic as well. I kind of joke within that year, I got through 7 books, probably more than I've gotten through in the last 20 years. There was points in time, you know, when I would read some of the content in these books, and especially, you know, the Dr. Fung's books, and I was almost brought me to tears because of how I felt, almost like my education, I was duped. I wasn't given the truth, and reading about some of the studies of, oh, why breakfast is the most important meal of the day and who it's funded by. And it really got me thinking and realizing that we have done no service to help people with this problem that we have, this obesity problem and diabetes problem. More and more adults and children are getting diagnosed with it. It's not so much, my husband kind of says, you know, it's a disease of obesity. I mean, having diabetes, it's people that get type 2, it's because they've not taken care of themselves in that regard. But the thought that it is chronic and there's no fix and we just progressively get worse, we believe that that's false. I mean, there's been evidence to show that.
Well, I read a very interesting journal article yesterday that I had not read before. Kim Raines, who's one of my moderators, and her podcast just came out right before we had this one scheduled to record. We're recording at the end of September. It was something she shared. It was, I can't remember what journal it was in, and I can't remember the title of it, but she shared it in the Facebook group, and it was about, have we got it wrong? It was something along the title of that, and it was talking about how doctors monitor your A1C. And that's how we're deciding if someone is on the road to bad health, by monitoring A1C. But the whole point of this article is maybe we should be monitoring insulin levels. And I'm like, are they really just asking? That was the whole point of the article. Like, actually, fasting insulin levels do a better job predicting it before your A1C goes out of whack. And I'm like, I can't believe that this is just being asked.
You're right. It is. In fact, my husband scheduled for a follow-up, and I said to him after listening to Kim Raines' interview, I said, you need to send a message to your doctor and you need to have them get your insulin levels. So he did. And then he gets a response back saying, oh yeah, they're going to do your glucose levels. And I said, no, I had to go back in. I said, to clarify, we're asking for insulin levels. We want to fasting insulin levels.
Fasting insulin levels. The whole premise of this journal article also was that there's very little research out there. They did a literature review as part of this journal article, and they're like, we found this and this, but there wasn't that much, and we think we're testing the wrong thing. That was the premise. And blood glucose is so interesting because I wore a continuous blood glucose monitor for a week as part of the Predict 3 study, and it was incredible how much my blood glucose varied, whether I had a cup of coffee, but when I woke up in the morning, and if I jumped on the trampoline, you know, it would go up and down. And so I think, you know, if someone had captured my blood glucose at this point of the day, it would have been so much higher than if they'd have captured it at that point of the day, but I was still in the fasted state. So that goes up and down in such a range. That was eye-opening. You're not just, you know, like at 92.
Right. 92. You don't stay constant. Yeah.
No. And it goes up and down. And, you know, if you go to your doctor's office, run up a flight of stairs, your liver might dump out some glycogen. Now your blood glucose is up. They test your fasting blood glucose. They're like, oh, it's high. You're pre-diabetic. You're like, really, 10 minutes ago, it would have been at a different. It's just so interesting how what we're using as markers of health.
Right. Yeah. And I think even Dr. Fung talked about that in his book about we're so concerned with treating the blood glucose and looking at where that level is in your, and we're like, oh, well, you're in good ranges, but it's like, yeah, but what about what we're doing with it? It's going into the cells. It's killing, it's damaging our body. It's killing our eyesight, our, you know, our kidneys, our heart. And it's like, why are we not concerned about what's really happening here? Just so we see, you know, good numbers in the blood that, like you said, that can fluctuate all day long.
Right. It was very eye-opening to see what made it fluctuate and the things that caused it to, you know, I had some surprises. Some things I wasn't expecting. Like I took a supplement and then it went way up at bedtime. And I'm like, what happened there? That was crazy. I wasn't expecting that. So anyway, it was fascinating to think of all the things that have affected. But I'm glad your husband's getting his fasting insulin. So the doctor didn't give him pushback. Once you figured out what you were really asking.
Finally, she said, okay, like repeated it. So I'm like, okay, she understood it now, but it took a couple messages for them to understand. No, I wasn't asking for the typical that you do every time. We're really asking for something different. So yeah, so we're excited, and I can talk more about him too, but he jumped on board with me as well. And so he had gotten diagnosed with type 2 diabetes late November of 2018. Initially, he just changed his eating habits because he's an IT guy, as you probably figured out. They're used to working in cubicles and, you know, they work long hour days. They go out to lunch. That's how they network with their team. And, you know, they eat the breakfast that the big work company provides. And so that and staying awake with high, you know, diet, but caffeinated beverages, especially like, you know, Diet Dew, that just really played a toll on his body. And if just stopping the Diet Dew and making his own salads and not going out to lunch anymore and, you know, making his own breakfast, he was able to, within the first 4 months, bring an A1C of 11.4 down to 5.
Wow. And was he also, he was fasting at that time too?
No, he hadn't started the fasting truly. He was supportive of it, but himself until about December of like 2019, I would say. So with going on with him too, he has overall lost 87 pounds.
Wow. And good job, Chad. Her husband's name is Chad as well.
Yep. So he does, and he does an alternate day. So he does an alternate day fasting, but it's more of a 4-3. He kind of does a hybrid of that. So so he's doing really well with that, but just goes to show you that it is truly more about diet, and the fasting has really helped him. So he's really excited going back in for his next appointment because now he has been fasting for a while, and to see if he can go off metformin completely.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah. Such a great feeling. I know he feels so much better.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that just, it is amazing. And for him, it was interesting too, because he would talk about how he used to think that, oh, my blood sugar is going low and I need a snack. And he realized how much of it is mental and not, you know, physical need.
I found watching that on my blood glucose monitor, my blood glucose recovered very nicely. It would go down and then my body took care of it. It would go up. It was just a nice little gentle curve.
Yeah.
Fascinating to watch. I also really think that the continuous blood glucose monitor is a tool that if we gave it to people early, people who were not diabetic, because you can't get it. You can't get a prescription for one, you know, unless you have a diagnosis. But really, we could prevent so many of these issues if people saw what was happening.
Right.
You'd be like, oh, I have a problem in the making. You know, you would see it with those cycles up and down, and before it's too late.
Oh, absolutely. They kind of get a warning. Oh, you're pre-diabetic. And it's like, well, what does that mean? You didn't send me home with anything. You didn't tell me to do anything. You just say, oh, you're pre-diabetic.
That's when someone needs a glucose monitor, a continuous blood glucose monitor. They need fasting insulin checked. That, I mean, really, I think that could nip it in the bud.
Yep, I agree. I agree. We need to get onto these things sooner than later and get people to see what's really happening, because then they can get that, you know, buy-in when they have that knowledge.
Well, it's good to see the conversation occurring. Just this morning, I think some of the moderators of the group said we have a chat, and one of them was talking about how her father-in-law went to the doctor. I think it was her father-in-law was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. The endocrinologist said, intermittent fasting. You need to start intermittent fasting. And that was fabulous to hear.
Oh, that is.
You know, that it's coming through the medical community and starting to be recommended. And then on the other hand, you have someone who'll be in the group. They're like, my endocrinologist said, don't do intermittent fasting. You're like, well.
Yeah. And that's when you need to give them the books and the research and say, you need to read
Give them Dr. Fung's books. That's, you know, they like to hear from another doctor. So the diabetes code is definitely one I would hand to them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would agree with you. You know, and when you had on Susanna Jouteau, the other dietitian from Canada, you know, that's when also I was really peeking up. I'm like, okay, people in the health community are starting to support this and getting even justifying more of a reason why I thought this was a good thing and we should continue to do this. In fact, I have a ENT doc at my hospital that he spends so much time with his patients, and interestingly, I didn't know, talking about intermittent fasting, is he does it as well, and has for the last 8 months, that when I do a presentation, we just started doing it the last 3 months on intermittent fasting. It's living an intermittent fasting lifestyle, and we do it via Zoom now since COVID. I very heavily, it's based upon your book and Dr. Fung's book. a lot of information is presented exactly if they would read your book, which I highly recommend and give you credit for. But I want them to know there's resources out there. And this is what I'd recommend. Go get these top five books, read these books. This is how you do it. This is why we're recommending it. These are the health benefits associated with it. And so I'm trying to get people interested in it. And so he saw the screen on the TV as he was heading towards the cafeteria with this advertisement of my class. And he called me and must have talked for over an hour and a half about intermittent fasting and how his jaw has dropped several times and the things he's read. And I need someone to refer my patients to because I can't spend so much time in the office with them. And I'm so happy to know that you do it so that, you know, there's somebody that, you know, else that we can refer to. So although my hospital doesn't have an outpatient dietitian, that's something that we're talking about.
That's amazing. I love the idea that there's a local medical weight loss company that wanted to partner up with me a while back. And I turned it down because they also use diet pills and medications. And I'm like, I just can't. I would love to help you develop something with intermittent fasting, but I'm not going to get on board with diet pills, you know, but they're like, that's what people want. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to. I know that's what people want because that's what I wanted way back in the day. I went looking for, you know, prescription diet pills and I got them. But to have a program that is not say, here's the diet pill and do some fasting. No.
Right. You don't need all that. You don't need all that.
Your body will take care of your appetite. That appetite suppressant pill that you think is helping you is actually hurting your natural appetite hormones. It's making it worse for your body. But I love the idea of clinics just helping people let their bodies do the work.
Absolutely. And when I started doing this, you know, I was obviously my husband and I really wasn't sharing it with too many people because, you know, I'm the dietitian and you're like, what do I say? And so I was at a holiday, just a really small gathering. It was my manager, my co-manager, and a couple of other close employees and coworkers that our main manager kind of manages. So it was only like eight of us. And somebody asked a question in regards to diabetes and to somebody else. And they said, well, ask Autumn. She's right here. And I kind of had that moment like, if I say what I do, it's out of the box. Like, if I do it, this is it. There's no turning back. If I tell them what I do and what I would recommend to treat these symptoms of the diabetes type 2 that they have. And so I did. I just like, okay, here goes. And I told them what I did. And one of them is the head of HR at the hospital, and another one is a doctor himself. And you're talking about a lot of professions here. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to hear this, maybe things I don't want to hear, but it was amazing. You know, they were almost like, I felt like kids at Christmas time hearing the Christmas story, like leaning in and just hearing what I had to say. And they were really interested in it. And then anyone said, you know, how come we haven't heard of this? And I said, because there's no money in it.
Right. When was this conversation? When did this happen?
This would have been around probably December 2019, this past Christmas.
The reason I'm asking is because you know what happened December 26th of 2019, that New England Journal of Medicine article came out. So that's the turning point, I think, right there for the medical profession. Now, if anyone's like, I think it's not good, say, oh, you must not read the New England Journal of Medicine.
Yes. And that has been a wonderful piece to have. Yep.
Yeah. Right. It's a fabulous tool. And the thing that thrilled me, I've said this before, when that article came out, people were joining the Facebook group. And instead of saying, you know, usually, you know, like, why are you want to join the group? People say, I want to lose weight. But right after that article came out and it was on all the news channels, people were saying, I want to be healthy. I want to, you know, increase my longevity. And so instead of weight loss, they were looking at it as health benefits.
Absolutely.
And that's the thrilling shift that I hope continues.
You're exactly right. And I think once people, you know, as you say, it's the health plan with the side effect of weight loss. It truly is. There's so many factors that can be corrected and fixed by fasting that you won't have to take all these pills and medications and all these other things that we think we need to take to treat this. Our bodies are smart. They're not stupid. They want us to survive at all costs. And by helping our body get back to what it was designed to do, by fasting, you know, we can help take care of a lot of these things and not, you know, continue to suffer for them.
You said something really important. Our bodies are smart. And we actually had somebody in one of the groups this past week who went to, I think it was a nutritionist, who said that if you're fasting, your body is going to devour your muscles. Mm-hmm. And your heart is a muscle. And so it's going to use up your heart. We're like, I was like, no. Do you really think that your body is going to choose your heart as a good source of energy when you have excess fat right. on your body?
Right, exactly.
Does that even make sense? But she was told that by a dietitian.
I would like to clarify, there are registered dietitians are nutritionists, but nutritionists are not dietitians.
I'm not sure what okay. this person's qualifications were. It was something along those lines.
And I'm not saying there isn't dietitians, registered dietitians that wouldn't say that because, again, it's based off of a training and what we think logically is going to happen. But we know better. That's really not what's going to happen. Like you said, if you have all these fat stores on board, you know, it's going to tap into those before it ever taps into your other, you know, muscles and things that are important.
It's not eating your organs. It's not using your liver. It's not eating up your whatever, your lungs. Oh no, I fasted for so long. My lungs got all
right.
gone.
That's going to take too much energy. It's not going to do that.
Yeah. But I'm still overweight, but I have right. no lungs. I mean, that's not how, not how the body right. works. But our bodies are smart and we've got all these things. You know, the fat stores are there for a reason. We just have to teach our bodies how to tap
yep.
into
yep,
them.
Exactly. And like you said, you know, we constantly as a society are always drinking on something, sipping on something that is spiking our insulin all day long. Well, why would our body ever need to tap into anything if we constantly get a grumble and we feed it? Or get a grumble and we drink it? I mean, there's never an opportunity or a chance for it to do what it is designed to do.
Exactly. And so it's just really amazing, like I said, when we get out of our body's way and let it do what it's designed
yeah.
to do.
It's amazing.
So you mentioned you got down through to 157 October of 2019. What's happened since then? How's your weight been with your fasting?
Yeah. Around that time in October, I kind of hit a plateau around that time from, I would say, that lasted until that point in time. I was really ramping up listening to the podcast. I would hear people say, oh, they do a 20-hour fast for our eating window. And I'm thinking, that is crazy. I remember coming home and telling my husband, I mean, I believe this stuff, but I'm like, that's pushing it, you know? And then by accident, you know, I had a very busy day at work. I wasn't able to eat my brunch, kind of my oatmeal that I typically would do like I was doing up until that point. And I looked at the clock and I was already into a 22-hour fast. And I was like, wow, I didn't die and I don't feel hungry. Like, this is really weird. So for me, I was like, okay, well, that wasn't hard at all. Let's run with this for a while. So then I started doing aiming for that 20-hour fast, the 4-hour eating window. Sometimes, depending on where I had to run kids, you know, it would be 23.5-hour fast. It kind of would vary quite a bit. But finally, I broke that plateau and the weight started moving again. So I got down to about 140, 143 once the quarantine happened about April. And I kind of lessened up a little bit when we first started getting into it because, you know, you're home all day, you know, I'll do an 18.6. And so I did that for a little while, but then I just started feeling like this just doesn't feel as good to me. So I decided to go back to that 20-hour fast. And that really seemed to be kind of the sweet spot for me.
That's really what I've kind of started doing lately because I haven't been drinking wine at home. That has naturally shortened my window.
Yeah, long enough, but not too long that you can get in a lot of trouble. But it seems to be a really good spot. And so, yeah, that really did help. And as I mentioned, I was working remotely 100% from mid-March until mid-June. And in that time frame, I had only lost maybe 3 pounds. But when I went back to work, it was like, even though there was not a lot of people there, but whoever I saw was like, oh my gosh, you know, you've lost a lot of weight, where nobody had really said anything to me up to that point, you know, up to the quarantine. Nobody had really commented or said anything. And it was just like those 3 pounds. But what I noticed, those 3 pounds is where I saw the most body recompositioning. That was really where I noticed it. My husband noticed it. Friends noticed it. It was just like, that was the point at which my family started saying stuff. And it was like, okay, guys, I've really lost 3 pounds. Like, this is really not a big deal. But it just seemed to be the point at which it really was evident.
3 pounds of fat. If it was, you could have even lost more than 3 pounds of fat if you built some muscle in there. But if it was just even 3 pounds of fat, that's huge. It takes up a lot of space.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't think it because it sounds so, you know, minute, but it definitely made a big difference for sure.
That's awesome. Now, how do you eat? What foods do you love? What foods work well for you? I love to hear from someone with your medical background what you like to eat.
Yeah.
Other than beets, not
yeah,
beets.
Yeah, yeah. I don't do the beets. I definitely tend to make healthier choices, but I'm not going to say I deny anything. I mean, during quarantine, I had to laugh to my husband. I said, I think we've eaten more ice cream in the last 3 months than I have in the last, 10 years. So I definitely don't deny if I really want it, but my go-to, I really like, nuts and trail mix. So that's typically, I'll have that. I'm really big into making my own yogurt. So I really enjoy that. So I typically, make a meal with my family, if we grill food out on the grill, or vegetables, salads, we try to incorporate a lot of different things, but it varies. I mean, some days we're doing more of a pasta meal, and some days we're doing more of a grilled meat kind of thing. But obviously, as a dietitian, I try to always include all the food groups. So,
right. You eat all the things.
Yeah, we try to eat all the things. And so if I kind of look at my day, I kind of run through it and be like, okay, well, I had nuts, so I had some really good fats and some good protein, and I had yogurt. Okay, I hit my dairy there. I had a salad with my dinner. I had some chicken, and maybe I did have some dessert, but I try to make sure that I'm, touching on at least 4 or 5 food groups to get a good balance, because I've learned from your books as well as Dr. Fung's book, that our bodies don't know calories. They know nutrients. They really know the nutrients. And that's the example of, when you eat at a fast food restaurant and you eat and you're stuffed and you couldn't possibly eat another bite, and you get home and then pretty soon you're looking through the fridge and cupboards for more food. And it's like, wait a minute, you just ate a whopping amount of calories. And why are you still hungry? And it's because your body didn't get what it needed. It was looking for something very different that wasn't supplied. And so it's going to keep telling you, I'm looking for something in particular.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move, or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. The side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Yeah, that is just so important. Dr. Fung says our bodies don't have calorie receptors, right? He uses that as part of his argument that calories is just such a flawed paradigm, which we know.
Right.
It's nutrients that matter. I'm like you. I feel better when I eat a whole wide variety of foods, and that includes fats from dairy and grains and vegetables. And it really has to be well balanced. Sometimes people will have watched some YouTube video or something, and they'll come in, they're like, well, I watched a video that said you have to break your fast with blank, 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 I'm like, no.
Yeah. What feels good to you?
No. Right. And I feel best when it's well balanced, when it has a mixture. Like if I ate something that was really high fat with not much carbs, I don't think I'd feel good. If I ate something that was all carbs with no fat, I don't think I'd feel
good.
Yeah, I need it to be balanced with protein and fat and carbs. Like grandma said, well-balanced meal.
Yeah, no, most definitely. And I find even, I have to laugh sometimes because I find that I feel like I'm more and more like you in many ways. Like the last couple of days, I broke into the cheese and crackers, which we've always have, but it just been nothing that really called to me. And I'm like, you know what? That really sounds good.
I just love cheese and crackers.
Well, yes. And I live in Wisconsin. So,
Oh, I bet y'all have some great cheese.
You gotta have some good cheese. So, yes. So, yeah, I listen to my body too, but I like a good variety. And even my husband, on his up days, he's a little this, a little that, he's kind of all over the board because he has all these tastes and flavors and all these different things that his body, that he wants. And so it's kind of an interesting concept of really listening to what your body is telling you.
I like to have a lot of different flavors. Like when I'll open my window, I like to take a dinner-sized plate. You know, this is a snack. Maybe some people would call it a meal. I don't care. But I open my window with a dinner plate full of little things often. Like it'll have a little bit of hummus over here and then some pretzel chips and then a little strawberry jam that I'm going to put on the crackers and then some cheese and then some broccoli that I'm going to dip. You know, and I like to have just all those different tastes.
Right, absolutely. Instead of just sitting down with some salsa and chips. I mean, I really want that variety too. And I feel like your body does as well.
Or like an avocado.
Ooh, yes.
Right now, I'm really into avocados.
Me too. I love avocados.
And I eat the whole thing. The whole avocado with just a little salt right there on the corner of the plate. Yeah, it's so good. It is one of my favorites. The weather is starting to change, so I wonder how that'll shift what I'm craving
this year.
But it does tend to happen. Maybe I'll want some soups or something.
Yes, when the seasons change, think about more butternut squash or different things. That's funny because on Pinterest, I'm starting to flag more soups and putting them in the files. And
yeah, I'll look away maybe from the hummus because, you know, we're end of September here and it's just starting to get a little chilly here in Georgia. And so I'll have to pay attention to that. It seems to happen every year. I look away from the avocados and then in the spring, I'm like suddenly craving them again.
And they are so good for you. I mean, they're just delicious and
they really are. You know, the key is real foods. And the PREDICT, you've read about the PREDICT study with Tim Spector.
I didn't read it, but I heard you talk about it, yes.
Okay, well, fascinating stuff. I can't wait. But it was so interesting. I can't wait to get my results. They tested my gut microbiome, and I had to send that away. And then also the continuous blood glucose monitor, because the idea that we have individual blood glucose responses is just so fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Versus the glycemic index. So, you know, figuring out what foods work for us. I could see different things that I was eating. One day I had this smoothie that I was trying. My blood glucose went whoop straight up. Yeah. It was interesting versus, you know, my cheese and crackers, steady as can go.
Isn't that amazing? And that, I think, as you mentioned before, you know, lends truth to how you always figured you did well with carbs. And then you did those tests that proved that you actually do. Your body does prefer them. And I believe that I'm probably one of those people too. I've never done a low carb, no carb kind of concept. And I find that I don't overdo it, but I definitely don't deny them. If I'm going to have a really good piece of bread, it's going to be real grainy and whole grain. And I just incorporate those and I don't seem to notice a difference in how my body responds and how I feel. Now I've not been tracking blood sugars, but in terms of how I feel like they work well for me.
Yeah. And it just showed me that all these things are nice, you know, the blood glucose monitor, the DNA profiles, although those are still in their infancy. But really, it all just confirmed what I already knew.
Yeah.
I didn't need any of those tests. I didn't need the continuous blood glucose monitor because I already knew what worked well. I already knew a smoothie made me feel yucky. So then I saw why on the graph, why I can't, you know, but I'm sure there's people that can have a smoothie and feel great and energized and but I went whoop, crash. It felt terrible. It felt terrible. And of course, we know that's quick energy for the body. But one of the smoothies was made with chickpeas. You would think that would, 'cause I do great with chickpeas, but not blended up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because it was already partially digested. You know, your body didn't have to do much of the work.
Exactly. It was fascinating. So you use intermittent fasting with patients at this time?
Well, at this time, so far, all I've done with the patients is in my classes. So doing those intermittent fasting, trying to get people on board with that. More so with, I also teach a diabetes class that I've had several patients that have said that their doctors recommended they do intermittent fasting or have put them on 16-8 protocol. And so that was as early as, I would say, last fall, maybe, that I'd heard people saying that. So that's feeling good because I know it's coming. I know people are getting more and there's the research there. There's the articles. And, you know, I attached all those articles to people that asked me about it because I want them to read it. I want them to do the research. I want them to read the books. I feel like the evidence is there and I would like to do it more with my patients. Sometimes working as an inpatient dietitian, have to take a different angle sometimes and work on the moment. Sometimes they are not into hearing about losing weight. They just, you know, want to what do I need to do to get out of here?
That's a whole different relationship.
Yeah. But I would like to have that opportunity, and hopefully in the future, trying to come up with some type of a clinic that we could have the doctors refer their patients to, that I could see them more than once, that there would be follow-up, there would be that opportunity to help them to actually incorporate intermittent fasting to help with their health and correcting their diabetes and such.
I really feel like we are still at the very tip of the iceberg. I counted on my fingers. You know, 2014 was the first fall that I was living this as a lifestyle. So this is the seventh fall that I've been doing it. So it feels like forever. It feels like the momentum is suddenly about to just burst. And it's going to be, I mean, I know it's quote mainstream, but I just feel like we're at the verge of it really making a difference in the health of people.
You're exactly right. I mean, my daughter had a deviated septum surgery just this past Thursday. And I was kind of course, I took her to my hospital. And I was kind of like, oh, geez, I'm going to be like bored for like 5 hours. I won't know what to do with myself. You know, I won't have my 7-year-old mom constantly. So I brought some reading materials. And I had such great conversations with the doctors and the nurses that were coming in to me and asking me about intermittent fasting. And we talked about it that before I knew it, it felt like 30 minutes. They were already saying, oh, she's, you know, in recovery. She did great. And it was just like, okay, this is happening. You know, this is being seen no longer as a fad. People are seeing this as a viable way to treat obesity, diabetes, you know, a slew of other health conditions that through not necessarily what they eat that will come in time, but when doing that time-restricted eating and giving their body a chance to heal. And it was just, it was so great because I felt like, wow, this is really happening. We have come so far. Like you said, we're on the verge of it just taking off, and we're going to see more and more. And when I did my very first Zoom, I had over 70 people signed up to attend. And so that to me was like, wow, people really want to hear about this.
In a couple weeks from today, I'm with a major insurance company has asked me to speak to their people. Like I'm doing it online. And that's really exciting. You know, they've been studying Fast, Feast, Repeat at this insurance company. And they reached out to me and they're like, would you do a presentation? And I'm like, yeah.
That is wonderful.
It really, really is, because people are listening. And you know, when the healthcare professionals are doing it and recommending it, that's how the world gets changed and the paradigm shifts. It's given me the tinglies.
Oh, it is. And that's a great place to start, because so many people that work in insurance companies, those are desk jobs. Those are jobs where they're working long hours. They are sitting for long periods of time. You know, it's the sitting is the new smoking. And we've got to nip it in the bud and help these people to do something. And I think that's a wonderful place to start, to get out there. That's wonderful.
Well, we are almost out of time. What would you tell someone just starting out with intermittent fasting, or what do you wish you knew when you first started?
Oh, there's a couple things there. So I wish I would have found it sooner. I definitely wish I would have known more about it. I wish I would have seen your book in 2016, your very first one come out. So that's one thing. I think it would have maybe changed the direction, not necessarily being a dietitian, but definitely how I approached it or how I taught it. And again, for myself as well. My dad passed away with Parkinson's disease January of this year. He had it for over almost 22 years. And with all the studies showing the health benefits associated with prevention of Alzheimer's and dementia and Parkinson's, and I think had I known, I really wish I could have done something that maybe there would have been an impact on his life.
Did he also have dementia along with it?
Yeah, towards the end.
My grandmother, she passed away from Parkinson's, and she had dementia as well. So it's a hard thing to watch, isn't it? Heartbreaking.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is definitely very, very heartbreaking.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. And ditto. So for myself, I want to protect myself and my family. And, you know, if we can do anything fast to prevent this from happening, because it was a horrible thing to watch him live through, especially the last couple of years was the worst.
It was hard. Yeah. My grandmother, I almost feel like the dementia might have been a blessing, because she would have hated it. It's like she didn't really realize what was happening. But she was just an amazing woman, you know, in her 40s and 50s. And then to see it's hard. So, yeah, you're right. Being able to age well is one of my biggest motivators.
Yep, I agree. And that's what I want. I want to be healthy, definitely knowing about sooner, but then also trust the process. don't just go by that scale. And I know a lot of people talk about that all the time, because even in myself, my weight will fluctuate. On a really good day, I'm 136. And on the next day, I'll be 141. And it's like, I've done nothing different.
Oh, no, I gained 4 pounds. What's wrong with me?
right. You're like, okay. It's just a number. It's just data. Yeah, it's just data. Yeah. So yeah, trust the process and enjoy the process. I mean, I have to say, I've learned so much. And just in the last year, even about intermittent fasting and our bodies that you thought you already knew.
Right. But you were open-minded. You were ready to replace that outdated information with new information and change lives.
Absolutely.
Well, Autumn, it has been great to talk to you today, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Do you have an intermittent fasting story to tell? Email me at jen@intermittentfastingstories.com and I'll add you to the lineup. That's GIN@intermittentfastingstories.com. The world wants to hear your story. That's it for today. Remember, I may have a doctorate, but I'm not a medical doctor. So don't use anything you hear on this podcast as a substitute for medical advice. Please always check with your doctor or healthcare provider if you have medical questions. I'll talk to you next week, Fasting Family, where we will hear another inspiring story. Have a great week and fast on. Intermittent Fasting Stories is edited, mixed, and mastered by Resonate Recordings. To learn more, visit them at resonaterecordings.com or email them at hello@resonaterecordings.com. Intermittent Fasting Stories listeners will receive a free offer if you mention that you heard it on the podcast.